Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We will be at Fadley's on Friday. We were at Fadley's last Friday. Had such a great conversation there with a fellow that owns a guy named Mark that owns Medium Rare. So make sure you hear that this week. We have the Preakness race, the Preakness Stakes being run this week. Bob Baffert will be here. Lots and lots. Larry Kalmus, Pride of Mount St. Joe, with all due respect to Jim Schwartz and Chris Pica. He'll be here this week. And we're going to run some races this week, but we also have some baseball going on, and the Orioles are home all week long. Luke Jones has spent his weekend at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. He was not in the sky chasing the Northern Lights like some of us were, but of course, my press pass is under review. They let you in, so there you are, seeing the defending National League champion Arizona Diamondbacks. Dude, I got to be honest with you. We talked a little bit on Friday. We had a crab cake down at Fadley's. We talked last week, preview the series. I kind of forgot, like, they were in the World Series until I saw, you know, Carroll rolling around. I mean, all the guys I watched in October for a month who sort of went away because they're the Arizona Diamondbacks. And, like, they haven't beaten us since 2007 or whatever in Baltimore. So this was a little bit of a flashback series, I would think, even for you, who doesn't sit around watching the Arizona Diamondbacks play every day, but did for a month last year. And formidable competition, I would say. Real good vibes for the team on Friday with Ruben Splash, Saturday walk off of Westberg, and then Sunday kick the ball around a little bit. But all that being said, I mean, we're talking about a loss and not a great loss and not indicative right of who they are, but they're playing just some unbelievable baseball the last 2 weeks.
I mean, not just the last 2 weeks. I mean, this has been who they've been since the beginning of the season. I mean, they have a couple series loss, but they continue to play 667 ball. They continue to win 2 out of 3, right? I mean, the weekend was what we've seen. They win 2 out of 3, and okay, they lose a game on Sunday. Yeah, you're right. They kicked it around a little bit, and you know, we could talk about Ramon Urias, who's playing sparingly, and when he plays, he makes a critical error that then leads to, you know, the game breaking open up an inning or two later. But they lost. Every team loses games. I mean, they're going to lose games the rest of the year, but there's...
Why are we also shocked every time they lose?
Well, that right there reflects, you know, you saying that says it all, that this team is really good, and they need to be really good because the New York Yankees continue to be really good, and they continue to win, and they're right on their heels. But beyond that, which we'll continue to talk about that for the weeks and the months ahead, I assume.
And I remember a time when the Yankees would be a game behind and would just outspend you and go get their Scherzer, Verlander, whatever they're going to get. Ed Whitson, for crying out loud. That's how old I am. But that's not really the case this year, where they're destined to improve and destined to have the money to spend and destined to have the depth in their organization. That, you know, if the Big Bad Wolf is coming them to get them with the Yankees, this is a lot of young guys that have either failed here or got hurt. You know, there's a lot of things that could go wrong for there to be distance here, but the Orioles feel like they're the more pliable franchise of the two between now and, let's say, August 1st, when you can augment your team.
Yeah. I mean, there's that. There's the fact that the Orioles are much younger. And I mean, we saw this with the Yankees last year, injured guys that wore down. I mean, there's certainly more of a question for that for a veteran laden club.
That's why I said pliable. I sort of meant that by pliable.
Sure. Sure. I think there's still room to grow. There's meat on the bone for the Orioles. Whereas, and I don't say this to be disparaging to the Yankees, but you know, for the most part, and that's not to say they don't have anything in their farm system, but for the most part, this is kind of their team. And to your point, are they going to be able to go out and acquire a piece that, you know, if they say, okay, we'll add payroll, but how are you going to go get that in the middle of the season? But the point is,
well, it becomes a little bit of a bidding war, whether it's they're going to get this player or we're going to get that player. And that's the way it was when Angelos and Steinbrenner were fighting over David Wells in 1996 or whomever it was, that we could never compete in that place. I think it's the other way around this time.
Yeah. I also think you have to be really careful doing that. That's also how the Orioles landed Albert Bell. And we saw how great that worked out for them in terms of what they were on the field and what he was. So, yeah, so there's some of that, and there'll be plenty of time to talk about that. I mean, we're still a couple months away from the trade deadline, but in the meantime, this is a team that just continues to roll, continues to play good baseball. One thing that came to the forefront on Friday night and then repeated itself on Saturday, Craig Kimbrell, some middle ground with him, taken out of the closer's role for now, although I don't necessarily think that's permanent. I said all along, I never really would have treated Craig Kimbrell as my everyday closer anyway. I think you're much better off trying to match up and try to pass the baton a little bit in that regard. But he pitched well on Friday night in the seventh inning of a one-run game. It's not as though they relegated him to mop-up duty. And then he pitches the 11th inning in Saturday's win and pitched well there. Hit batter, but
But
other than
this
that,
is a
looked good.
point where they're going to manage this, and he is a $13 million player. If his arm's not falling off, if he can get guys out, if it's about strikes, not necessarily his back or
Yeah.
issues like that, or being overworked, they can alleviate a lot of that. They can't make him throw strikes, but they can at least make sure when they put them out there, him out there, that they're giving him a chance to succeed, which is going to look different than Batista, which is take the ball, throw it, take the ball, throw it, and then his arm falls off. But in the case of Kimbrel, this can be well managed, and you don't want to bury him. You don't want to be an asshat fan and say he stinks, just throw him away, because that's not smart. And last week, seeing this on the internet does not shock me. I forget about baseball fans just in a general sense, but I also understand, to your point, this is well run now. Elias makes good decisions. They make analytical decisions. They make decisions based on data. And to your point, never was going to be the closer every night. Now they need to figure out what the role is. And to your point, over the last couple decent innings over the weekend, right? Like for
Yeah,
now.
exactly. And to be clear, that doesn't mean he's never going to close. What I'm saying is, you should, to me, someone who's going to be 36 years old here in the very near future was never the guy to say, well, he's going to be the workhorse and he's going to save 45 games. I mean, I think you even look at how the Phillies tried to approach him last year. I mean, you go back last April, he got off to a rocky start. He pitched in the seventh inning in a close game. I mean, it's not as though this is the first time that a team has backed off of a veteran guy,
This
or
isn't
if
Mariano Rivera, who's been doing this 15
no,
years. You're like,
no.
go out in the seventh. Well, how dare you insult me?
Well, I think some of this, and you already alluded to it, some of this is you're also paying him $13 million. That's the respect. That's the respect you offered him in the offseason. Now it's a case of, okay, what is going to be your optimal role in terms of you being effective, you staying healthy, us covering ourselves in the event that you're having an off night, that we're not just going to go down with the sinking ship. And this is why I kind of scoffed at some of the fan reaction to Brandon Hyde, what he said in DC on Wednesday night. The proof had been in the pudding already that he had pulled him from some of these ninth inning outings. So he's not going to throw him under the bus publicly, nor should he. He
But he's not
wasn't
going to
going,
let them lose games because of him.
and that's the big key.
He's
I
making
think
twice as much money as everybody in the bullpen combined. That's a tough job position, right? Put yourself in any of that job position where you go to work every day. That guy's making 13 million. You're making 300 grand. Everybody's here. He's blowing games. That creates problems, man. I mean, since the beginning of time, in any workplace, that can create a problem. But all that being said, he's making $13 million a year, and we need to count on him, but you can't let him lose games in a pennant race. Like, this is different than any other Oriole year because the Yankees are there, and every night they have to win. They're expected to win. We weren't talking like this for the last 25 years, really.
Right. But at the same time, that can be a potential problem, but let's face it, there isn't exactly a litany of established arms in the bullpen. It's not as though you have some other team's former closer setting up for you in the eighth inning, watching Craig Kimbrel then close games. So, I mean, the reality is, if anyone has anything to say, it's like, guy's fifth on the career saves list. Let's take a step back. And I think that was part of the message over the last several days when you asked any other guys in that bullpen, like Cano, for example. He was asked on Friday night after he saved the game and Kimbrel pitched in the seventh, through his interpreter, he said, look, I mean, we all go through some time periods where we're not as effective, and we all go through that. And he alluded to the fact that some of the struggles he went through big time a couple years ago, even before he arrived in Baltimore. So there's always going to be some of that. But I think what we found over the weekend, and again, we'll see how this is going to evolve, is the Orioles finding some middle ground here and saying, look, we still value you. We still brought you in a 3-2 game in the seventh inning on Friday night. That doesn't mean that's going to be your role moving forward, but there might be some times where we say, you know what? This team has a, whatever team it is, and I'm just, not specifically alluding to anyone, but if it's a team that's a little more lefty heavy, that might be a night where, maybe there's a specific pocket of of in the order that Craig Kimbrell might match up with, and that might be a night that Danny Coulon might be someone that closes in the ninth inning if the lefty the pocket of lefty hitters in the opponent's lineup is due up in the ninth inning. That's why so many in the analytics community, beyond the scenario where you have Mariano Rivera, for example, and even they would say Mariano Rivera might be better off pitching the eighth on a certain night if the heart of the order's due up in the eighth inning in a one-run game. But putting that aside, point is, if you don't have that lockdown dominant closer that's a workhorse, that's durable, that is going to make 75 appearances, what you know, whatever the leading mark would be in the American League, then you should be matching up and mixing and matching and kind of using a little bit of a committee approach anyway. Now, that doesn't mean all eight guys in your bullpen are going to close games, but I've said this over and over and over in a modern day game of baseball where even the aces, even number one starters around the league, I mean, Corbin Burns has gone seven innings once so far this year. It's a different game than it was even 10 years ago, let alone 30 years ago. So with that being said, you have to have multiple guys that can pitch the eighth and the ninth inning over the course of 162. If not, you're going to run your best relievers into the ground. So
Well, if you're
there's
going to win
some.
101 games too, you know what I
Well,
mean? This
sure.
is
That, and that's
that
what I
is
mean.
really the difference here over 15 years of you and I discussing this closer role. Not just the game has changed and all of that. It's just they're going to win a lot more games. They're going to have so many more nights where they're ahead and, by a run or two, because that's baseball. And we need a guy, not the same guy every night. And a lot of that got borne out in the 70s with Bruce Sutter and every single night them running Sparky Lyle out in this closer thing and the fireman and then Rolaid sponsored it. And all of a sudden you have to have a closer. A closer. We're gonna win 100 games this year. He's not closing 80 games. Like, so no matter who it is, even the Yankees, and I'm sure there were a lot of games they were up 9-2, and Mike Stanton pitched the ninth inning or whatever. Jeff Milton Nelson pitched the ninth inning. That's who the Orioles are now. They're going to win all of these games, and he can't. No one could be that guy every night. It blew Bautista's arm out last year, right? Like, he shouldn't have pitched as much as he did. We can say that's revisionist history, but that's for a lot of these guys. But there is a point where 75 appearances and 100, let's see, 160, that's every other night, over a year, over 7 months, with no problems, with full health, with nothing but perfect results. Because Lord knows, the first night you give up a home run to Shohei Ohtani the ninth inning, you stink. No matter who, hey, he's got 12 saves in a row. He stunk last night. Let's have Coulomb close tomorrow night. That's baseball because they play so much, and some folks around here aren't used to that because we haven't won a whole lot, right? And in a general sense, I mean, we have young enough people around here; they haven't seen anything in regard to baseball, but have strong opinions about what they read online. But the opinion is, this is a 36-year-old guy, and I was when you were talking about picking spots and all this stuff. You know what I would compare it to? Third down defense pass rush. When you're signing a 36-year-old closer, you're signing Dwight Freeney at the end. You're signing Terrell Suggs at the end. You're signing Elvis Dumervil. Any of these guys, we say he's not a 75 down snap guy. He's going to be 25 downs on third down in the perfect situation, and we're going to nurse him up. And we don't need Kimbrel pitching more than 3 days a week. Once we get to that point, settle down. We're not going to, because we're playing the Steelers this week, we'll let him run around for 65 snaps this week. And I think of when you say 35, 36-year-old closer, you say fifth on the all-time, it almost feels like sacks to me. I almost want to put that in and get a little football in here.
I mean it, but it speaks to also understanding who the player is. Let's be very clear, Nestor. Craig Kimbrell just had an awful stretch. I mean, he had a five-game stretch where he didn't finish the ninth inning four times. I mean, he was taken out because he was that ineffective. So, fan reaction or media reaction to that, there's concern was fair, but also for me, it was also understanding what this guy has been, and some of this might be that people would question and say, why'd you throw $13 million at a 35-year-old closer who go look at his last 6 or 7 years? Look at the ERA over the last 7 years. It's been very up and down. I mean, some years where the season ERA just looks, ooh, is that guy, is he washed? Is he done? It's been up and
But
down.
if they
He
didn't have him the first month, who would have been the guy they were going to?
well, and that's and again, that kind of lends itself to the overall point that we're talking about here. You don't really have anyone, and I don't say that to be a knock on Cano, Or Danny Coulomb or Jacob Webb, who's given them some major contributions over the last few weeks. But you don't have that lockdown guy. You don't have that elite Edwin Diaz kind of guy in today's game where you say, well, he's the ninth inning, no questions asked. They had that in Batista. You know, I don't know if he was necessarily overused. Guys break. I mean, we see pitchers babied all the time that still get hurt, right? I mean, it's a violent, unnatural act on the UCL, on the elbow and the shoulder, and
What
guys
night
get
does
hurt.
Kyle Bradish go this week? We'll
Yeah,
see that in
yeah.
action every
I mean,
night, right?
we'll be holding our breath again. It's looked good so far, stuff wise, but we'll be holding our breath again. So, yeah, Grayson Rodriguez has now thrown a couple bullpens. Looks like he could be activated here in the near future. What's that going to look like with his shoulders? So, the point is, and whether you're talking starters or relievers, you need as much depth as possible, and you have to be able to pass the baton as much as possible, unless you have such a dominant team. And look, the Orioles have a very dominant team relative to the rest of baseball, but they still play plenty of close games. So unless you're winning 9-1 every night, and that, then if you're doing that, then you're the greatest team of all time, potentially. But unless you're doing that, then yeah, you're going to have to use different bullpen arms. And in this day, even with the starting rotation that's pitched as well as the Orioles have over the last few weeks, and let's face it, their rotation's been really good. Brendan Hyde said on Friday, he confirmed that you could see a six-man rotation, at least for stretches of time where they don't have many off days, just to kind of manage these guys. And who are you going to pull? I mean, Cole Irvin's been one of their best starters over the last month. I mean, you're going to relegate him to the bullpen just because Grayson Rodriguez is coming back? Or do you maybe go to a six-man for a few weeks at the very least, and you kind of see what it looks like? But point is, you need as many arms as possible, and you have to be able to trust as many arms as possible. And yeah, that's not to say that Mike Bauman, for example, is going to close games, or whoever the last man in your bullpen is going to be, but you better have four or five guys that you feel good about on any given night, given matchups, given fatigue, given just load management for all these different guys.
Length of the game when you're playing 11, 12 inning games.
Oh yeah. I mean, when it's an extra inning game, then that all bets are off. That's why Craig Kimbrell got the win on Saturday. He pitched the 11th because you got to the point where you say, okay, who else is it going to be at this point? So that's why it was, even in a losing effort on Sunday, Albert Suarez giving them the innings that he gave them was good. On the heels of an extra inning game, that put them in better position for the Toronto series. So it's all
Failed
related.
starter Suarez, right?
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, and not even that much, just the fact that, hey,
They made
they
a
have.
seven-man rotation
Right,
with him, right?
exactly. Although
I
Corbin
mean, we were
Burns.
talking about a three-man rotation last month. Now we might have seven guys that have capably started and pitched pretty good baseball at some point in the last month. All of them
Yeah.
have had a decent start.
Yeah.
Some of them
Yeah.
have three or four decent starts. Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. We're going to be promoting the Maryland Lottery and our Pac-Man scratch-offs on Friday at Fadley's. I guess for the rest of the pitching, while we're on pitching, and we'll get to hitting later, because and defense, you know, we'll do a whole segment on that later on. Everybody pissed off on Sunday. They kicked the ball around for a minute and a half. They've been almost flawless in that way, certainly for the last month. It's like, oh, the bullpen's a mess. No, the closer's been a mess. The bullpen hasn't been a mess. And
Yeah.
the other part of the piece with Kimbrel, four out of five taken out in the last two he's pitched. If four out of the five, I don't know, did they lose all four? I'm trying to think, because one
They
went extra
want.
innings and they won. I mean, I'm trying to think of how many games it cost them. And to your point, he got hooked and they still had a chance to go back out and maybe win. I'm trying to think if any of those games it really like got out of control. Maybe the first or second. I'm
They
going through
lost
each.
the o The Friday night Oakland game where he
That was
blew
the
the
loss,
save,
right?
he lost that one. I think they lost two of them. The point you're making, though, is
Is
spot
Brandon
on.
Hyde can come out there and still save the game,
They
hurt your
figured it out.
feelings, take you out. We'll all have a shower and win tonight. And lesson learned, they haven't lost. He hasn't cost them a lot of games, is what I'm saying.
And again, that's where I go back to when he is struggling, that's when you take a step back. And they did that on Friday night. He came in the seventh inning. It was a 3-2 game at the time. He pitched well. It looked good. And I know there was a little bit of loud contact. That happens. I mean, if we're going to pick apart every single guy's outing, I can tell you plenty of guys that we all view as good that will give up some loud contact sometimes. So that's going to happen. But point is, he did his job. But you look at where that was in the game, it was still high leverage. Was it the highest leverage of the game? No, but it was higher leverage
It's an
still.
out you got to get.
It's that, but it also left the Orioles more outs. if that goes sideways at that point, you still have other relievers you've yet to use that you can bring in to try to put out the fire. And also, yes, you still have your give your offense then three more ups to try to tie the game if he gave up two runs. So, you know, that's what you have to do sometimes. I mean, you back off guys a little bit. That doesn't mean you bury them. That doesn't mean you're looking for a pound of flesh to embarrass the guy, despite how, you know, some people on the internet were talking about it. But, you know, you adjust, and then you see if he gets himself back on track. And, you know, what was funny about it, Kimbrel talked in the clubhouse on Friday afternoon, and I don't know if he was trying to allude to the last 6 or 7 years, which he's been so up and down, but he said, look, I've struggled before. I've struggled worse than this before, and I've gotten out of it. I take full accountability. I need to be better. I can't put my bull position that many times in a week. I take full responsibility for that. At the same time, I'm confident that I'm going to figure this out. You know, I've been doing this a long time, but I got to go do it, and I got to make the adjustments. So, and his last two outings since he spoke, it's looked better. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to look great against the Blue Jays. It doesn't mean it's going to look great against the Mariners. It doesn't mean he's going to be fine the rest of the year. I would venture to guess that even if Craig Kimbrel reels off a streak of scoreless outings here, he's going to struggle again at some other point this season, maybe multiple times, because, again, that's kind of been who he has been in recent years. The guy that was the Hall of Fame, elite, unbelievable, unhittable closer in Atlanta all those years ago, he hasn't been that guy in a long time. That said, that doesn't mean he can't still be effective. And this kind of goes to you use the pass rush analogy. The Justin Houston that we saw in Baltimore wasn't the Justin Houston in Kansas City, where he was a Pro Bowl player, but he was still productive for them. He had some big games. He had some quieter games, but he was productive. Go down the list of veteran guys that they've used at different times. Sometimes they look amazing. And sometimes they even have an amazing year, like Clowney did this past year. But other times, it can be more modest. Other times, they might look their age. They might look like a guy that you say, okay, he's not the guy that he was 7 years ago.
Well, this guy's a Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's fifth on the career saves list.
You know what, make him a Hall of Famer? Closing game 6 of the World Series that the Orioles win.
I mean, it would help
October,
him, sure.
Right? Like, I was looking at his, like, how much money he's made, $100 million, like, all of that.
Yeah.
And but he's only won one title, and it was 6 years ago now. I mean, 18, you know, he got imported into that to win, and, like, he wants to win. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know anything about him. I'm not – I've been around plenty of 35-year-old closers back in the Lee Smith era and the Doug Jones era and, you know, all of that. But when you import a guy like that into this situation, this might be the best baseball team this guy's ever been on, and he's been on some really good baseball teams.
I mean, it's very well possible. I mean, you're talking about a team that's continues to win 2/3 of its games. So
getting guys out in the 7th inning for a 36-year-old guy making $13 million a year, still important.
Or if it's the eighth inning, or maybe it becomes a case. And this, you know, to the scenario you presented with the World Series, I am still going to bang the table between now and the trade deadline about them needing to add another really serious elite reliever to their bullpen. That I'm hoping that's the guy pitching the 9th. But that doesn't mean Kimbrel's not pitching the 8th in a 3-2 game or the 7th in a 3-2 game. So the point is, again, you need multiple guys who can do that kind of work for you. So I get it. He's making $13 million. You'd like him to be more consistent. I'd like him to be more consistent. I was concerned about what we saw over the last couple of weeks. That doesn't mean you bury him. That doesn't mean – certainly doesn't mean you're going to release him. I mean, especially with $13 million salary. I mean, we're talking July or August. If he's terrible that entire time until then we're talking about that. So it was good to back off. They found some middle ground here. He contributed over the weekend. He looked better over the weekend, and we'll see how this looks. I think if Brandon Hyde has learned anything, these first 2 months with Craig Kimbrel, or month and a half, it hasn't even been 2 months. You know, it's still early, despite what we think. You know, he's seen that, okay, it's not Felix Bautista. I can't run him into the ground, you know, throwing a lot of back-to-back days and 3 out of 4 days. That's probably not conducive for him or most guys, quite frankly. So I'm going to manage him there. And chances are, if I'm going to have him in a high leverage spot, I probably need to have someone behind him that isn't necessarily warming up from Jump Street, but they're stretching and they're going to be ready to go to start loosening if it looks like the bad Kimbrel's on the mound that night. I think Brandon Hyde thinking about it in those terms is very fair. right? So
And
we'll
he
see
will
how
get
it
pulled
plays
out of more
out.
games, by the way, to your
It's
point.
going to
To
happen,
your
right?
point, he's going to go out and throw ball one, ball three, ball seven, and trouble's going to happen. And Hyde's going to say, I've seen this. I don't
Yeah.
care about your feelings. We're in a pennant race. It's a
The
one-run
Phillies
game.
did it last year. Go back and look. Now, granted, the Phillies also have some other really impressive arms in that bullpen. By the way, to your point, I'm glad you made the point. The Orioles haven't had a bullpen problem. It's been a ninth inning problem here recently with Craig Kimbrell specifically. Rest of their pens pitch well for them. I mean, okay, we could talk about guys like Bauman or, Johan Ramirez, guys that have been on the back end, not the back end, the front end of the bullpen, I guess would be the better way to describe it. But in terms of Cano, Coulomb, CNL Perez, Sunday aside, obviously was not good Sunday, but Jacob Webb's been so good for them. So it's not as though they're devoid of other options. They're just, they're not the established ninth inning elite option that, that Felix Bautista had become in just 2 years. So they were always going to miss him. And we saw how Brandon Hyde navigated the last September. With matching up and by committee. And okay, sometimes it was Cano, but sometimes it's Coulomb. Sometimes it might be Perez. We've seen Jacob Webb close a couple games here. I think for the time being, until, and I'm not saying they will, but if they go out and acquire an all-star closer, a younger Craig Kimbrell, for lack of a better description, they should continue to proceed that way. Look at the matchups, look at how a team's lineup is constructed, and go from there. And if it's Cano one night, great. If it's Coulomb one night, great. If it's Jacob Webb one night, great. If it's Craig Kimbrell that night and he does the job, awesome. I just named four guys that you feel pretty good about overall. I guess, some people would argue about Kimbrell, fine. Although I'll remind everyone, he was excellent the first 3.5 weeks of the season, which is still a big percentage of the games they've played to this point. So, again, cooler heads need to prevail in these types of scenarios. Doesn't mean you can't be concerned. Doesn't mean that when Craig Kimbrell, when the bullpen door swings open and he's running through, that fans aren't going to be nervous. I understand that. There was plenty of nerves on Friday night, but at least it looked better. And I applaud Brandon Hyde and the Orioles for finding a middle ground here. Back off him a little bit, but you didn't want to bury his confidence. You didn't want to embarrass him. You didn't want to relegate him to mop-up duties. I mean, we're not at that point yet. I mean, he hasn't, we're not talking about someone who's been bad for a week or for 6 weeks, So, this is a case of reset him a little bit, back off a little bit, leave yourself some options, leave yourself some outs. And, he was able to do the job and did the job Friday night and got the win in relief on Saturday. So, seems like that situation has at least calmed down a little bit, at least until the next time he comes in and he can't throw strikes, I suppose.
All right, we'll talk pitching and defense, and we'll actually talk about all these wall bangers we have around here. Luke Jones has been covering baseball. He'll be there all week long. Not a lot of rest for the weary here after having a couple days off last week and getting to sleep in your own bed and run down to D.C. and play a couple of games there. But big week ahead, and all things being considered, this is as good as it gets on a Preakness week where you're home all week. The horses are coming in. We got a post position draw. I don't know that we got decent weather on the Preakness forecast on Saturday. We've been doing a lot of Preakness around here this week, but baseball and Preakness, first place, it's May. It's this, despite the outcome on Sunday, this is a real nice period and a big week ahead for them.
No question, no question. And I mean, they've got an off day Thursday, so they do get a little bit of rest there. But look at the schedule ahead after this homestand concludes. They've got quite a stretch of not many off days. So again, that six-man rotation chatter I think is interesting. I don't think it's a definite that they're going to do it, but Grayson Rodriguez threw a bullpen on Sunday. Sounds like he's doing well. Sounds like he's throwing all of his pitches. Sounds like he's close. I don't know if they'll send them out on one rehab start or saying, well, you haven't been sidelined that long. So, we'll see how it plays out. But in the meantime, this team has an opportunity against the Toronto Blue Jays, who, as much as the Orioles and Yankees have been impressive, the Blue Jays, very underwhelming, very disappointing to this point, especially considering how they were perceived just a couple years ago. So, chance to win another series against an AL East opponent and then finish up the homestand against Seattle over the weekend.
If you want to hear me poop on Toronto, you can do that from last week as well, as far as like them being Canada's team and me thinking they were about to become a Yankees. I mean, I really believe that 5 years ago. I thought, man, once they got the fever back and they started playing playoff games up there, I just thought, like, look out, because they have in my mind, unlimited resources because they're Canada's team. And when I'm there, I just, you know, they're the franchise since I saw Joe Carter hit the home run out of there in 93. Over the last 30 years, they've been a really disappointing franchise in that way to me, giving resources where they used to be. Going back to 89 Sky Dome, all the players that they had when they got good in the 80s and early 90s, that franchise sort of lost its way to some degree over the course of time that I always looked at as I always thought they would be the ones that would keep Boston out of being elite in the division because I just thought they would have resources, and it never plays out that way. They almost feel like the small market team from Canada to some degree.
I think you look at that team and they're 3-4 years ago, what the Orioles are now, how the Orioles are perceived now, I think 3 or 4 years ago, there were a lot of people who thought the Blue Jays were going to become that. You know, I mean, they had their stretch with Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. You know, they had some, you know, playoff teams. Bautista with the bat flip famously in the postseason. But that young core that they had, I think, was perceived similarly to what we talk, how we view the Orioles right now. But, hey, you can have prospects. You can have young talent. You can even have money to spend. You still have to go out between the lines and play, and you need to win games. And that's where the Blue Jays this year, and, you know, to a lesser extent, because they were in the postseason, but I think a lot of people thought they might become this dominant team, and that just hasn't happened for them, and it hasn't happened so far this year. So we'll see how they
cautionary tale. We're all expecting the Orioles to just be in three World Series the next 5 years and win two of them, and, like, that's not as easy as it looks keeping young. I mean, I remember Marcus Stroman was going to the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, I mean, you got to go do it. Hey, he's had a good career, but he hasn't, and he didn't stay in Toronto long term, right? So, hey, you got to go do it. You got to capitalize. You got to strike while the iron is hot. That's why for the Orioles right now, who knows what's going to happen with Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, all these guys. I mean, are they going to extend
they
some of
them? They feel like Orioles for life right now, right?
Yeah, they always do until they're not anymore. So, I mean, the point is that they've got a phenomenal team on the field. They've got more on the way. You think, you hope there's payroll flexibility and the potential to do some things on that front, but you still have to play between the lines, right? When first pitch at 6:35, I almost said 7:05, but it's 6:35 during the week now. First pitch, payroll and prospect ratings and all that stuff, none of that matters. You have to go out and win. And the Orioles, to their credit, they've done an excellent job of that now for going on close to 2 years. But in the meantime, the Blue Jays have been one of those teams that you would say has been the opposite. They've kind of gone the wrong direction. Not that they're totally out of it, but they have pretty clearly, along with Tampa Bay, you know, been very underwhelming in the AL East thus far.
Springtime at a pennant race in Baltimore. I'm wearing my Curio Wellness shirt here. We had Wendy Bronfon on last week. They have presented our 25th anniversary. I was chasing the Northern Lights over the weekend. You can follow me out on social media for that to see whether there was success or not. I'm inking a rather comedic piece. I think the John Buren piece in my 25th anniversary where I did a tongue-in-cheek version in 1987 of failing miserably at doing television. I'm thinking about keeping that sort of theme of failing miserably and chasing the Northern Lights this weekend. But it all adds to the experience. It's all baked into the cake, even when you go to Spokane. He is Baltimore Luke. I am Nestor. We're very available individuals here all week long talking baseball. We're certainly going to get some football in here before it's all over with. And we got the Preakness in town this week. And Bob Baffert's going to be stopping by. Larry Colmus, some of the folks from NBC. Donna Brothers is going to be here talking about Mystic Dan shipping to Baltimore. And at least for a couple of days, we get to talk horse racing. I get to sound like I know what I'm talking about. I know a lot more about what I'm talking about than anybody else on the radio. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Down the stretch they come at Baltimore Positive.